Because we have to remember that 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you would put the word equity in your title and you wouldn't get people to come. So we would hide it. We knew that we were going to integrate it into what we were doing, but we would not put it because we wanted people to come, you know?
Welcome to another episode of the TOTOS Mathematics for All podcast. The mission of TOTOS is to advocate for equity and high quality mathematics education for all students, in particular Latina and Latino students. This episode is origin stories. You ever wonder where an organization like TOTOS comes from? Who were the people in the conversation? Getting together for what reasons? And how is this story of TOTOS connected to, say, the work of the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics Equity and Diversity Committee, the work of Julian Weisglass's Mathematics Leadership Institutes, and the efforts of teachers to address the needs of English learning students in the mathematics classroom? Storytelling traditions are important, and how often do we tell stories in the context of understanding the shape of the field of mathematics education? Well, here we're going to try to tell one. I sat down with my quote-unquote elders, truly people on whose shoulders I get to stand now, because they've been doing the work for years of organizing, imagining, leading, even staying up on trends, and providing tech support well into their retirement. Well, today, Susie Hokanson, Nora Ramirez, and Bob McDonald, all former teachers who are well into retirement, but who just cannot stop. Because there is so much work to do in educational leadership, to do with supporting teachers day in and day out. And seriously, Susie and Nora are two of the most energetic and committed people I know in mathematics education. They tell their stories of how TOTOS formed some 20 years ago, from a meeting at an NCTM conference, to a listserv with a bunch of email addresses, and to this almost 1,000 person membership, NCTM affiliate that it is today. Moving forward, conversations about mathematics and social justice for all children. Okay. So come on, let's listen in. But first, we're just going to do intros, then we're going to open the conversation.
Okay. All right. My name is Bob McDonald. I'm a retired middle school teacher. I live in Tempe, Arizona. I taught for 8 years in Chicago and Milwaukee, and then 30 years in Phoenix.
I'm Nora Ramirez, and I am since it started, but not in the first few initial trying to get a start at meetings, which Bob can probably tell us about.
Did you want to say anything else, Nora, about what you've done in life and continue to do?
Oh, sure. I call myself a teacher, and as a teacher, I've been a middle school teacher and a high school teacher, but for the last over 30 years, I've been working with teachers, and my children used to call me, tell people that I taught teachers who taught teachers. I've always been a little different in my teaching, and now I realize that this has been in my TOTOS mission and goals has been in my blood since the very beginning.
Thank you. And Susie?
I'm Susie Hokanson, and at the time that TOTOS was formed, I was executive director of the California Mathematics Project, and being in California, we have a large number of Latinos, but not a whole lot of resources that we could go to. And currently I'm retired. I've been retired for 8 years. And I'm also the member services chair of TOTOS Mathematics for All and a past president.
Great. I mean, you all work a lot for retired people, right? Like.
Yeah, I mean, we were sitting around a meeting one day and we looked around and we said, we're all getting old. And that's when we got the goal of developing new leadership. So, Adam, NCTM had an equity and diversity committee at one point, and they had a few meetings at conferences like Chicago, which I did not attend. Then the first conference I attended was in Las Vegas, and they had an equity and diversity meeting, and then there was a special after-hours session. So Linda Fulmore and myself and another young man are walking down the hall, and the advertisement said, you know, do you teach Hispanic children? Come to our after-hours session. Wine will be served. Introduced by Benjamin Banneker, president. So Linda goes, I'm a member of the Benjamin Banneker Association. The guy goes, I like wine. I go, I teach Hispanic kids. So we all went in the room. And they're having us sign up with email addresses. So I'm sitting there wondering, I wonder what they're going to do with these. So after everybody left, I asked the NCTM rep if I could have them, and she gave them to me, and I made a listserv.
And thus Todos was formed.
Right. And thus that was, and then, okay. So Miriam Leyva called me about 2 months later. She said, Bob, we're going to form an organization. We're meeting in Tempe. You're going to organize it. So,
wow. You can't say no, Miriam. You show up.
Yeah, one of the things that I do remember is that at those two general sessions at NCTM, the second one, I remember Gil Cuevas, who was on the EDAC committee. He came up to me because I knew him from before. And he was saying, you know what, I think it'd be good if we have Miriam Leyva head this organization. She has the skills, she has the knowledge, she's committed, and people know her. Mm. And I thought that would be great. And I remember also afterwards, an email after that second meeting, I believe it was in 2002, that email sent to everybody who attended the session. And, you know, if you have time, if you really want to be involved, mm-hmm. send me an email, et cetera. And unfortunately I didn't, but that's okay. Because I got on board right away after.
So that when you're talking about those initial first meetings, what year was that in Chicago? Does anybody remember?
It seems like it in 2002, Bob.
Yeah, 2002. The NCTM standards came out that.
2000.
I think that was 2001, and then 2002 was Las Vegas.
Okay, got you. Yeah, I was going to try to look them up too. Yeah, 2001 was Orlando, 2000 Chicago, 2001 Orlando, 2002 Las Vegas.
Okay.
Yeah, so 20 years in the making then, right? Yeah. From 2000.
And I always think that we cannot forget that it was NCTM that gave us the impetus to do this. It was their committee, their equity and diversity committee. And like you said, Gil was part of it. Gil Cuevas was part of it. And then Eleanor, help me, you all with
Lynn, Eleanor Lynn.
Eleanor Lynn was also part of that committee and became very active in our initial work too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I was also wondering about that time, like the framing of do you teach Hispanic children? Why do you think that was the question in trying to gather people around that?
Well, I think the fact that there is racism was acknowledged, maybe not publicly, by NCTM and by people. And that, you know, if you're going to address problems in society, a school might be a good place to start. Well, a person would be a good place to start, and schools would work. Yeah.
I think I had also heard that the concern, and it might be just the EDAC committee, the Equity and Diversity Committee, or it might have been NCTM. I'm not, you know, total NCTM, but the concern that not enough was being done for the Latino children.
Mm-hmm. I think there were also a lot of concerns about English learners. And people were asking NCTM, where are some of the resources? Mm-hmm. And NCTM couldn't come up with resources that were research-based and effective.
Mm. And I remember, so around this time, I think I was in college in 2000, and learning more about, you know, I grew up in California, but wasn't as aware of things like Prop 187 in my teenage years and things like that. And what do you think of the influence of the policies at that time also around people's growing concern about the populations of students like English learners?
At the same time, I think that was what we couldn't, in Arizona, we could not even speak in another language to students. It was totally against the law.
They took your law and made it tougher.
You guys had a tougher version of 187?
Yeah. That was a time when I used to say, so goes California, so goes Arizona. And at times that was good. But many times it was bad.
Yeah, I remember that 187 because I was a faculty advisor at UCLA with pre-service students who were teaching in the classroom. And, you know, one of my students came out and says, you know what, these kids really need to learn the mathematics. And she's teaching algebra in high school. And, you know, if nobody's in the room, I'm going to speak Spanish to them. And I would imagine that some of these laws were the ones that really encouraged teachers to seek resources as to how to work with English learners. Mm-hmm. Because if they're not allowed to speak Spanish, what can they do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was no organized group at that time to advocate for bilingual children in mathematics.
Yeah. I also wonder what the influence of Julian Weisglass on many of us, because he was working in California. He's from California, UC Santa Barbara, retired now. But he had an EMILY project where he was working on equity issues, mm-hmm. and first started in California only. So there are a lot of people that went through his leadership institutions and his work. And then he began working with, he got an NSF grant and was working with the state systemic initiatives funded by NSF. That was way back in the early 2000s, late 1990s, right? Bob, you can probably help me.
It was the late 90s, yeah.
Yeah. And he and his colleagues really pushed us, and we sent a team from Arizona. I think there were seven of us, and we went for 2 years off and on for a leadership institute and really pushed us to have those hard discussions and learn to try to understand other people's point of views. And even asked that when we went as a team, and it was required that our team be diverse.
Yes.
And Susie could probably add the California story of this, but when I look at a lot of us that have been active in Todos, many of us have been informed by Julian and have been developed many of our leadership skills because of his work. So yes. Susie, can you add to that?
Yeah, before EMILY came out, the California Mathematics Project at the time had anywhere from 12 to 14, 16 sites. And at that time, this was in the mid 90s, I was a site director. I was not executive director yet. And the California Mathematics Project had some funding and was concerned about equity. And so people, and there was a call for proposals for any project who wants to engage in a statewide equity project. And so I believe there were three people applied, and Julian had applied from Santa Barbara and received the grant. And so he had a program similar to Emily for the mathematics project. So he had funding for every site to send four representatives. And so I remember as the site director of UCLA, I sent four people. And he sort of was hoping one of the four people would be on the leadership team. You know, the others could be math project active participants, but someone from the leadership team. So I sent our co-director as part of the team. And so it was a two-year program. They had to participate for 2 years. And then what he did was that he developed all these structures. And I recall as a site director, I engaged a lot of those structures in our project. And so then he took that nationwide.
That's really cool. I pulled up a article of his from Educational Leadership from April 1997, where he's talking about deepening, the special issue is on deepening our dialogue about equity. And it has a lot of his, he delineates a lot of his approach here. Does it sound familiar? It says, let's see, some guidelines to follow, been talking in dyads, mm-hmm. right? Exchanging of listening. It sounds like he also had a strong emphasis on listening. I know I've read something else of his about listening to children. And so that's neat to realize there's a connection there between his Math Education Leadership Institute, his emphasis on listening and this kind of space for hard conversations. Yeah, Bob, go ahead.
Yeah. So when they ended Emily, they formed another organization which lasted for a while, and then they didn't receive funding, and they had a lot of materials, and they asked us and some other people, would you like these materials as long as you pay the shipping? So I have a lot of the materials that, who knows, they could be useful for maybe a leadership conference or something like that.
And to this day, I still use a lot of the materials and a lot of the stories, because part of understanding what students experience and what others experience is listening to stories. And so I still use so many of the stories that we heard, and but it was that I think he called it constructivist
listening.
Listening.
Constructivist,
yes.
Listening.
Yes, that's what he called it. Constructivist. And one of his quotes that both Bob and I say often is, no one is born a racist. They are taught to be one.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I think he's had an influence, and that helped because California had been so involved with some of his work and had been doing equity work, I guess, without him. Susie could tell us more. But it has made a difference in why there's so many people in Arizona that are part of our organization.
And so these systems, these projects had an impact on a white male teacher. I mean, I was teaching the way I had been taught, you know, don't, you know, mine is not to reason why, just invert and multiply. And then I took a class because my pay scale, I could move over at USI, and I learned why I was doing what I was doing. And the teacher was Nora. Nora was a great teacher. She would always make my brain hurt. And then from that, I took the classes. Then they made me a peer. They asked me, they didn't make me, but I became a collaborative peer teacher, and I got to be part of the Emily team. And then I had Julian. And wow, I mean, I knew there was racism, and I knew it was institutionalized, but it was a life-changing experience. And then I have Susie. I mean, and now I'm learning everything, so. But I taught the way I was taught, and it didn't change until these systems filtered down to the classroom.
So what else about that time or through the years have you noticed about what TOTOS stands for and how we've been continuing to work on certain projects and shifting with the times? Any comments about where we've been?
One of the perspectives that I seen was that in the beginning, in the 2003, 2004, 2005 area, teachers were just screaming for something to equip them to be effective. And we're talking about teachers who are really concerned and caring. And so I would say in the beginning, our focus was on providing the resources that classroom teachers needed. And I would say, fast forward from then to today, over the years, we're now going into policy. We're engaging people who have expertise in policy so that we know what we should be doing and how we should be getting there. People have knowledge of how to influence policy. People who have expertise in knowing what to do, how to go about doing it. So that to me has been the major change. We're now looking at a bigger picture, particularly since there are a lot of resources there. And one of the things that I've noticed as a result of this pandemic, more and more people have seen the inequities and they're looking to TOTOS or other equity focused organizations for support. They want to do something. All of a sudden they see it. And so that really moves into the policy arena because we're not talking about individual teachers. We're talking about whole systems.
And I also think that what has changed is that for a long time, people, and it's this connects to what Susie just said. For a long time, people were just thinking about this is for English language learners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then because our mission statement, remember, we were founded for we used to use Hispanic Latino students because we couldn't agree on that. but because that's part of our mission statement, but it's like now everyone understands that marginalized students go beyond the Latinx students. And then we're talking about beyond too. We're talking about all students. And yes, they might have been our only focus in the beginning. I think we have expanded to think about how do we go about making sure that students have the opportunities, you know, to truly learn. And people and educators and the general public believe and act on the fact that they can learn. So that's that expansion, I think is one thing.
And we also, because of who we are, we have outstanding members who do great things. I mean, two things that helped make us grow were the social justice position statement and the anti-racist paper with the four addendums. And the conferences. I mean, we have powerful people, and because of who we are, they do great things for us, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you know, the TOTOS conferences, when they're live, I only went to one, and I was looking forward to 2020, and it happened. But there's been a few now, and the feel of a TOTOS conference is a very different feel, at least for me, as an educator who identifies as a Latina woman of color. The people who come to the TOTOS conferences, you know, a lot of the sessions began with storytelling and people talking about their positionality. And that was intentional, right? Like presenters were prompted to like really share that. And the topics at a TOTOS conference, I remember just feeling like, you know, this feels a lot more like home than a lot of other math ed organizations feel like to me. And I think that that's something that makes the total space unique, you know, and it connects to what I think you're also saying, Nora, where there's this particular concern around, you know, definitely Latino and Latino youth, but also, you know, the equity perspective, the privileging of social justice, and also the connection back to the classroom, which I think is people aren't finding, they weren't finding a lot of places. And maybe with our current social movements, you know, beginning to pick up more and more. But I feel like Todos was and continues to be kind of on the forefront. So maybe it's a nice transition to thinking a little bit more about where you see Todos is headed and where you hope we're ending up or heading. Not ending up, I guess, that's no ending to the work, but like where we're headed.
and our community is changing. You know, it used to be, I would say maybe 10, 15 years ago, you start talking about equity, about teaching all students, about, you know, having access and all of those things. And you'd get into arguments with people. And today people want to know more, you know? I remember just recently I was in a national committee and we sat down and there were like 40 of us. And it was like, Diana Cejas actually said this, oh my gosh, I can talk about these issues. And everybody is like in with us thinking the same way. And that's not the way it was, you know, 20 years ago. It's not. So that's another thing that has changed. But again, we still have to go beyond the talk.
Right.
Make sure, yeah, that we can go beyond the talk.
So another thing that I see in the past, many people would ask Todos for a speaker for their conference. And again, the focus was more on for teachers, what can we do in a classroom? Well, now there's a tremendous amount of requests for total speakers. I mean, just the other day, I got an email from Rachel Bauer, who is our Instagram, Totals Instagram leader. And she was saying that on Instagram, someone asked her for a recording because she wants to see it. And so she asked me and we just sent that to Rachel today. So people are now seeking Todos because of our position on this whole anti-racist environment. How do you do it?
Because we have to remember that 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you would put the word equity in your title and you wouldn't get people to come. So we would hide it. We knew that we were going to integrate it into what we were doing, but we would not put it because we wanted people to come, you know? It's very interesting. And now that's not true anymore.
Right.
Julian had presented, I guess he had some people researching the titles of NCTM conferences, and there were only like two or three that had the word equity in them. And that certainly has changed over the years. But one of the things that's changed with Todos, when we first formed, all we did was take in dues, okay? Because publishers had money then, and they liked us because we're good people. And so we kept all the dues and they paid for meetings for us and we had salsa parties and we just kept getting this money, which we never spent. And now, you know, times are a little tougher and Todos might need to find some ways to make some funds. And I've had this idea before, and I'm just going to say it out loud now because I'm talking to three important people. Todos could have a speakers fund as a separate organization that would give the profits back to Todos. I mean, it would need a board, it would need rules, but when people like New York or Oregon contact us and they want a Todos speaker, we don't know what to do and we don't get any benefit out of it. So we would need an organization, maybe a CPA, if somebody knows one. This So anyway, I've been thinking about that. But so that's one thing that has changed, the financial situation.
Right, and also because the activities of Todos have changed too, right? Like you were saying before, not just taking, but also like there's committees, there's a lot of work to do. So there's a lot of organizing that's been happening. I remember going to the Todos board meeting my first year as a director and being like, this is a large group of people. You know, you think board, you think small group of people. And it's like, oh, look at the involvement and what we, you know, everybody here. And I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. So what hasn't changed is that we have been frugal from the beginning and we are still frugal.
Nothing wrong with being frugal.
You know, because as long as we're meeting our goals, but we continue to increase our activity and our influence in mathematics education in our communities, and we have got to learn to work smarter and not harder. And that's been my big thing lately. Smart. We're sometimes I think we're working harder and not smarter, you know?
Yeah. Yep. I know.
Yeah.
Great. Any final thoughts for our listeners? Anything you'd like to share that hasn't been shared yet?
I would just like to thank you for adding podcasts to the Todos repertoire.
Oh yeah, that's no problem. I mean, you talk about like the shifting membership and things like that. Like, I'm not terribly young, but you know, this is doing a podcast doesn't feel too outside of my realm of things I can do, you know, which makes me really excited for like the generations that come after us. Like, what are they going to think is just like not a problem, you know, and just their contribution. Yeah, I can do that. So yeah, I think that's pretty exciting.
I just kind of if this organization sounds like something you'd like to belong to, we really would like you to be active in it. And the only way, I mean, you know, when we have a membership in the almost 1,000, not quite, but when we're getting close to it, when we have that kind of a membership, sometimes we don't know. So sometimes you need to contact us and say, hey, I'm interested in. Because there's so much talent there. And so I would suggest that if it's something that you think you'd like to contribute to your time and effort, then because membership dues aren't, I don't say money because membership dues are only $35 a year. So time and effort, then please talk to someone. It's just contact one of us.
Yeah. Definitely.
And I don't mean one of us of the speaking here, but one of us that are in leadership positions in those.
All right. Go to the Todos website and check out and see who you can get in touch with.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the last thing that I would like to share is from the Talmud. Julian had it in a lot of his writings. If not us, who? If not now, when? The world needs to change and we need to do it.
Absolutely. Susie, you have any parting thoughts?
I just want to say that all kids learn, and we collectively have the opportunity to uplift everyone. And all kids matter. Everyone matters. And it's up to us to support all kids.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank our guests one more time, Nora Ramirez, Bob McDonald, and Susie Hokinson, for joining us on the Todos podcast today and for sharing a little bit about the origin of Todos Mathematics for All. Along with this episode, we have some links to Julian Weisglass's work, on equity in mathematics education leadership institutes that he ran in the 1990s. And of course, if you're not familiar with Prop 187 or other propositions in California that then were followed in other states in the late 90s and early 2000s, that were essentially anti-immigration policies framed around the debates of legal versus illegal immigration. You might want to check out the link we have there, the link to the California State Archives presentation, looking back at Prop 187 25 years later, that was made in 2019. Certainly, if we don't know our history, we don't know where we've been, and we don't know where we're heading. I want to thank our contributors one more time for coming onto the podcast, and also thank them for all the work that they continue to do to keep Todos moving forward. Well, I've been your host this time, Maria Zavala. The Todos Podcast is a production of Todos Mathematics for All. And until we see you next time, seguimos luchando. Adios.